Following are comments on William Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice, Act 3. Hath not a Jew eyes? Shylock accuses Salerio and Solanio of complicity in the elopement of his daughter Jessica with Lorenzo. He demands, movingly, to be treated as a human being, but is met with silence by his Christian hearers. In Act 3, Scene 1, Solanio believes he has confirmed the loss of one of Antonio's ships, probably the same one mentioned in the previous scene, and right away he catches sight of Shylock approaching and declares him to be the devil, quote-unquote, in the likeness of a Jew. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 18. Shylock immediately accuses the two men of having known about Jessica's plan to abandon him, and Solerio does not deny it. Solerio then asks Shylock if he has heard anything about Antonio's possible commercial loss at sea, and the moneylender responds with mockery of the Christian, quote-unquote, bankrupt and prodigal, who dared to accept a loan on frightening terms. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 36 through 37. Shylock must now feel certain that Antonio will be easy to destroy. His only advice to the absent Antonio is the twice repeated, quote-unquote, let him look to his bond. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 38 through 39, and Line 41. Shylock seems gravely provoked by Solerio's question about what good taking a pound of a person's flesh could do. As for the pound of flesh, he says, it might serve, quote-unquote, to bait fish withal. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 44. Or at least it will feed his own desire for revenge. Antonio, Shylock points out, has insulted and injured him at every turn, and his reason, quote-unquote, for doing so, says Shylock, quote-unquote, I am a Jew. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 48. From Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 49 through 60 inclusive, Shylock makes his noteworthy, hath not a Jew eyes speech. But it falls on deaf Christian ears. Jews, he says, are part of a common humanity, but he and his people have been scorned and mocked. Revenge, says Shylock, is now the law of his being. He will repay Christian injustice with interest. Quote unquote, if you poison us, do we not die? And if you wrong us, shall we not revenge? If we are like you in the rest, we will resemble you in that. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 54 through 56. All this calls for a considerate response, or at least genuine engagement, but there is no hint of comprehension in either Solerio or Solanio's reaction to Shylock's speech. Both heed the words of a serving man who informs them about Antonio's whereabouts, and they depart when they see Tubal approaching. Solanio compares Tubal, as he had compared Shylock previously, to the devil. That is these two men's response to Shylock's desperate plea. No tears, but am I shedding. Shylock is traumatized by the loss of Jessica and some jewels and ducats, but buoyed by what he hears from Tubal about Antonio's losses at sea. Still in Act 3, Scene 1, Tubal tells his friend that he has been searching for Jessica in Genoa, but without success. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 68. Shylock is by now in a state of agony, his mind warped by his losses and the insulting manner in which they were inflicted. He continually mingles his concern over stolen money with a deep sense of loss over his daughter and his damaged reputation within the Jewish community. He seems painfully confused about spiritual and material priorities, to the point where he can utter a sentence such as, quote-unquote, I would my daughter were dead at my foot and the jewels in her ear. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 73 through 74. Still, for the last few hundred years, most actors have played this scene with sympathy. The choice is very defensible. Some of Shylock's lines are powerful, especially if we accept that his obsession with financial loss stems mainly from the psychic trauma of losing access to the signs of material success, ducats and jewels that allow him to thrive in hostile surroundings. Shylock's complaint that he has, quote-unquote, no satisfaction, no revenge, nor no ill luck stirring but what lights o' my shoulders, no sighs but am I breathing, no tears but am I shedding, should inspire sympathy. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 78 through 80. Tubal brings Shylock strong relief when he tells him that Antonio also may have suffered from, quote-unquote, ill luck. He, quote-unquote, hath an argosy cast away coming from Tripoli. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 84. This relief is weakened, however, when Tubal mentions that Jessica has traded a turquoise ring for a monkey. In extreme distress, Shylock says only, quote-unquote, I had it of Leah when I was a bachelor. I would not have given it for a wilderness of monkeys. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 101 through 102. Jessica has injured Shylock's memory of his wife, Leah. Act 3, Scene 1 ends with Shylock buoyed by Tubal's reminder that Antonio's ruin is certain, and he directs Tubal to hire an officer in advance to arrest Antonio for forfeit of his bond when the appointed day comes. By now, we know that Shylock is more interesting than a mere stage villain. To be sure, he is dramatic kin to Christopher Marlowe's wicked Barabbas, the main character in The Jew of Malta. But Shakespeare's genius allows him to represent a villain as a villain and something more. Thy paleness moves me more than eloquence. Bassanio chooses the right casket and wins Portia. Graziano reveals that he and Nerissa want to marry. When news arrives of Antonio's peril, Portia promises to help. In Act 3, Scene 2, Bassanio makes his fateful casket choice. In Richard Robinson's Tale 32, from the 1595 English edition of the Gesta Romanorum, or Deeds of the Romans, we find the casket choice story from which Shakespeare is working. The daughter of a king, while sailing towards a marriage with the Roman emperor Anselm's son, is shipwrecked and then swallowed by a whale, which soon casts her ashore. A nobleman named Pyrrhus finds her and sends her to Anselm, who puts her through a trial similar to the one Shakespeare's play adapts. In the source tale, the maid comes to the lead casket and declares that, quote-unquote, God never disposed any harm, so she correctly picks the least impressive vessel and marries the emperor's son and heir. The moral of the Gesta's story is simple. The emperor is a figure for God, and in choosing to follow God's dispensation for her, the maiden represents a Christian soul choosing salvation in God. We might also cite the first epistle of John, chapter 2, verse 15, quote unquote, love not this world, neither the things that are in this world. If any man love this world, the love of the Father is not in him. In Christian terms, the casket scene works as an extended memento mori, or vanitas, display. These artifacts, often skulls or images thereof, were common in medieval and Renaissance times as meditative objects to encourage humility. Sometimes the objects would display a fair front, but an ugly, worm-eaten, obverse side. The main message was that we should be mindful always of death, but a second message was that we should resist the deceptive lust of the eyes. Within the Christian framework, the way to salvation is through honesty, self-restraint, and above all, acceptance of one's mortality. The carefully chosen metal, lead, thanks to Portia's father, has the same effect on Bassanio as the artifacts of Christian iconography. So what does the song that we hear in the background mean? Quote unquote, tell me where is fancy bred, or in the heart, or in the head, how begot? How nourished? Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 63 through 65. We are told that, quote-unquote, Fancy dies in the cradle where it lies. Act 3, Scene 2, lines 68 through 69. This may be a warning to Bassanio if he isn't too busy deliberating. Love begins with the eyes, so he had better not trust them too much. Whether Bassanio hears the song or not, he chooses the threatening lead container rather than the attractive silver or golden one, saying, quote unquote, "Thou meager lead, which rather threatenest than dost promise aught, thy paleness moves me more than eloquence." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 104 through 106. Bassanio has the right combination of appreciation for outward beauty and understanding that such beauty does not banish the cares or duties of a life that, on the whole, even for a rich heiress or a privileged young man, more closely resembles the base metal that Portia's other suitors have scorned than glittering gold or fair silver. The scroll that greets him in victory offers sound advice. Quote unquote, "Be content and seek no new." Act 3, Scene 2, line 134. Once Bassanio has made the correct choice, and frankly the maturity he shows in his assessment may strike us as unexpected, Portia delivers a fine speech in which she says she could, for Bassanio's sake, wish herself, quote unquote, "a thousand times more fair, 10,000 times more rich," and emphasizes that she considers herself only, quote unquote, "an unlessoned girl, unschooled, unpracticed, but willing to learn." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 154 through 155 and 159. Portia muses that just moments ago, before Bassanio made his choice, she was master of a great estate and of her own person, and now she isn't. Quote unquote, "This house, these servants, and this same myself are yours, my lords." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 170 through 171. Even so, Portia remains the very picture of a Renaissance girl uninterrupted. This all sounds wonderful, but there is one condition for Bassanio to observe. Portia is all his unless he gives away the ring she presents to him, in which case she will have the upper hand and may reproach him at will. Act 3, Scene 2, lines 171 through 174. Bassanio admits that Portia's words have all blended together for him. Act 3, Scene 2, lines 175 through 185 inclusive. Still, he seems to understand what she has said about the ring, and even takes things up a notch. Again, we hear the excessive, exuberant rhetoric from one of the play's men. Bassanio swears that death will take him before he gives away the golden keepsake. Quote unquote, "But when this ring parts from this finger, then parts life from hence. Oh, then be bold to say Bassanio's dead." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 183 through 185. Yes, but Portia didn't condemn him to death, only distrust. To make up for it, though, before blurting out that oath, he offers her the wonderfully romantic thought, quote unquote, "Madam, you have bereft me of all words. Only my blood speaks to you in my veins." Well said, Bassanio. Act 3, Scene 2, lines 175 through 176. Graziano at once announces that he has managed to sweet-talk Nerissa into marrying him, adding yet a third happy couple to the play's marriage circle. Graziano adds a bawdy pun to cap things off, because of course he does. And since this is a comedy, we might as well expect a false catastrophe. Sure enough, in come Lorenzo and Solerio to announce that all is not yet well. There's a letter from Antonio that turns Bassanio's cheeks pale with distress. Bassanio has no choice but to come clean. Quote unquote, "Rating myself at nothing, you shall see how much I was a braggart." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 255 through 256. Can it be that the successful suitor to the dazzling and richly left, quote unquote, Portia, was just the sort of production we might identify as glistering gold eye candy, rather than one grounded in virtue? As Bassanio himself admits, quote unquote, "I have, ellipsis, engaged my friend to his mere enemy to feed my means." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 259 through 261. That sounds perfectly dreadful, even if the comic genre makes light of the imposition. Meantime, as Salerio says, Shylock is in no mood to compromise. No matter, Portia will gladly take the part of Bassanio's friend, quote unquote, "Pay him 6,000 and deface the bond. Double 6,000 and then treble that before a friend of this description shall lose a hair through Bassanio's fault." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 297 through 300. Portia must be very rich indeed to conjure up such enormous sums. Bassanio, we note, uses the language of Roman honor in referring to Antonio's friendship. Antonio is, quote-unquote, "one in whom the ancient Roman honor more appears than any that draws breath in Italy." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 292 through 294. The two men overtalk their bond, as will become increasingly apparent, but that is not to disparage its integrity. "I'll have my bond, I will not hear thee speak." Shylock remains implacable, and Antonio looks to the end. In Act 3, Scene 3, Shylock proves implacable against Antonio, that quote-unquote "fool that lent out money gratis." Act 3, Scene 3, line 2. The sum of his response is, quote-unquote, "I'll have my bond, I will not hear thee speak." Act 3, Scene 3, line 12. Antonio then says Shylock's hatred stems from resentment of Christian interference in his harsh dealings with debtors. Quote unquote, "I oft delivered from his forfeitures many that have at times made moan to me." Act 3, Scene 3, lines 22 through 23. As it turns out, Shylock's revenge isn't simply about money, but Antonio also points out that Venice must take up an attitude that is nearly as mean as Shylock's. A bargain struck is a bargain struck. Thus, even La Serenissima, the most serene city, depends on the cash nexus. As Antonio says, quote unquote, "the Duke cannot deny the course of law for the commodity that strangers have with us in Venice. If it be denied, will much impeach the justice of the state." Act 3, Scene 3, lines 26 through 29. Arguing aside, Antonio is simply exhausted. His losses have ground him to the bone. Quote unquote, "Pray God Bassanio come," he says, quote unquote, "to see me pay his debt, and then I care not." Act 3, Scene 3, lines 35 through 36. "I have within my mind 1,000 raw tricks of these bragging jacks." Portia sets in motion her plan to save Antonio from Shylock and Venetian commercial law. In Act 3, Scene 4, Portia places Lorenzo and Jessica in charge at Belmont since she must go on a trip. That done, Portia hatches her Doctor of Laws scheme. She sends her servant Balthazar to her cousin, Dr. Bellario, with a request to send her some legal notes and lawyer's garments. With Dr. Bellario's remote assistance, she will play the role of a male attorney who can wield the potent weapon of contract law against Shylock and the Venetian commercial state. To pull this off, Portia must disguise her gender, since a woman of Shakespeare's time, leaving aside Queen Elizabeth, was in no position to take on such authority. She puts great faith in her own sly understanding of male posturing. As she tells Nerissa, quote unquote, "I have within my mind 1,000 raw tricks of these bragging jacks, which I will practice." Act 3, Scene 5, lines 76 through 78. How every fool can play upon the word. Lancelot and Jessica argue cleverly about salvation and damnation in this preparatory scene for the trial. In Act 3, Scene 5, Jessica and Lancelot dispute comically over salvation and damnation. Jessica summarizes Lancelot's case against her and Lorenzo well. The couple are damned, quote unquote, because I am a Jew's daughter, and he says, you are no good member of the Commonwealth. For in converting Jews to Christians, you raise the price of pork. Act 3, Scene 5, lines 29 through 31. This quarrel is a precursor of a more serious argument during Shylock and Antonio's trial about how mercy is granted and to whom. Lorenzo accuses Lancelot of egregious quibbling. Quote unquote, how every fool can play upon the word, he exclaims. Act 3, Scene 5, line 38. Lancelot's misstatements and quibbles are the lighthearted version of the play's weightier regard for terminological and spiritual misinterpretation, equivocation, and hypocrisy. Lancelot's wit mocks Shylock's cunning, but it may also be an advanced dig at Balthazar's upcoming defeat of Shylock, which results in a Jew's forced conversion to Christianity. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Sunday, August 17th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.